You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
What comes to your mind when you hear machine learning? For many, it's a buzzword thrown around in boardrooms, often cloaked in mystery. But in reality, machine learning is not science fiction. It's the silent engine behind the apps we use daily, the fraud alerts from our banks, the personalized shopping suggestions that appear as if they've read your mind. And tonight, we're not just demystifying machine learning, we're exploring its true significance for business and for the work that you do. From reshaping customer experiences to predicting market shifts to uncovering patterns humans alone might miss. And guiding us through this fascinating world is Timothy Oriedo, a trailblazer who sits at the crossroads of data, innovation, and strategy. He's here to show us not just what machine learning is, but what it means for businesses and leaders who dare to harness it. Timothy, good evening.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear us well?
Yes, I can get you very loud out here.
Fantastic. Let's begin at the foundation, shall we? In the simplest but most practical terms, what exactly is machine learning?
So machine learning is the concept, or rather the scientific process of creating mathematical models that can analyze or consume certain data and using that data to come up with optimal business decisions.
Mm.
Yeah, so to break it down more granularly, you have data on one side, and on the other side, you've got mathematical algorithms, and you also have computational ability, which means processing machines that can process the data and combine that data with the mathematical formulas to come up with solutions.
Can anyone do it, or does it take big data coaches like yourself?
So machine learning is a science, and by virtue of it being a science, it's a process that you have to be skilled in doing. So it requires a particular set of knowledge and skills to be able to come up with the machine learning interventions or models. Yeah, so it can be done, but by specific individuals or professionals who have been trained to be able to do it.
I hear you. Many think of it as futuristic, but where are we already using machine learning in everyday life without even noticing? And I'm asking this so that I can simplify it for people, because I'm already getting messages of people saying, yo, I don't think I get it. I'm already lost. So I need us to simplify it so that we're all moving in the same direction and at the same pace.
Yeah. So maybe just to simplify it, and maybe to use an evolutionary approach. I'm going to start with a calculator. We have a basic calculator that does computation. For example, 1 plus 1 is equals 2, square root of 1, square root of 3, and that computation continues to increase depending on the type of calculator you're using. Now, in the case of machine learning, the same way you have a calculator, and you input numerals in it. So those numerals is data, like 1, 2, 3, that is data. And now behind that calculator, there is a circuit, or rather a logical board, that translates the information that you put in into a mathematical computation that comes out with an output. For example, 1 plus 1 is equals to 2. We know that logically, but inside the machine, there's a machine language that interprets it into a language that the machine understands and computes an outcome. Now, when you talk about machine learning, it's now the data that is huge. And I'm going to break it down a little bit later, but now machine learning works better with what you call unstructured data.
Okay.
Okay. So data is also classified into two. So you have structured data, which is numerals, one, two, three, four. And then you have unstructured data. Unstructured data is things like photos, voice, images, videos, etc. Yeah. So that is data that can be analyzed. Okay. So maybe to rush ahead and just to tell you how that is done in terms of an output. If, for example, you always see when you're walking into a door that recognizes your face, the door will open.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a certain function that that device that recognizes your face and matches it to an existing image and then opens the door. So one of the applications of machine learning is facial recognition. Yeah. To bring it closer home, there's Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, we post our photos on Facebook. So immediately you post your photo on Facebook, including those ones of your friends, it will auto-tag them and say, you put a frame on someone's image.
And say, is
and
this...
link, this is so-and-so. Yeah. So that is a similar way, like a calculator. But then this calculator does not calculate numbers. It calculates what you call now digital geometry, facial features, and matches it and say, this is probable... this probably so-and-so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So hope now that sort of demystifies what machine learning is in terms of what
necessarily.
You see as a user.
Not necessarily. And I'm going to ask you to break it down even further. Who is doing the learning? The machine or us? Mm-hmm. Are we learning the machine or are we feeding the machine things to learn?
Yes.
So if it, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Machine learning, according to what I'm understanding from what you're saying, is basically us inputting data into the machine so it recognizes patterns.
Yes, you're correct.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, clever girl.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where the word learning comes from is the more data that you put in, the more intelligent the machine becomes. So it learns from the data that's input there. And then we talk about large data volume. So when about data, there's something, and maybe just to simplify, you can just call it four Vs. Volume, velocity, veracity, and variety.
What's the third V?
V, veracity. Veracity, which is unclean or dirty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please take us through these Vs.
So now, for example, when you're looking about image data, for example, on Facebook... So there's humongous amounts of data that come in on every single millisecond. So volume is huge. Two, velocity is high. Yeah. And then it's not so clear. Some people are taking photos with different devices. You know, some are clear, some are not clear. So we have now, for example, what you call compression algorithms that sort of try to clean up the data that is posted on social media platforms to make it more sensible. Yeah, and then link it now to the algorithm that was created. So this algorithm, when it's exposed to data, it starts learning. Yeah, so that learning is the same way you teach a child how to walk. You know, it learns and gets experience. It's such a huge discipline and a sub knowledge area. Yeah, of artificial intelligence, that the companies specifically who have been, companies that have been formed to train models. So it's called training. So that training means you keep exposing mathematical models to different data.
Yes.
And correcting it. So if it gets it wrong, you say, no, this was wrong. So it's called annotation. And it's a manual process. Now, have you ever logged into a website and it asks you for a password?
Yes.
And when you ask for the password, there's something that calls comes there and pops up and say, please confirm you're not a robot. Tick what is a zebra crossing. Tick what is a bus.
Yes.
Now that is one process that we use to train image models. So those are actually companies that pay those platforms that do verification of emails. To use those sockets that come to and on the consumer side. So it's they are outsourcing that process of training the model to the public to be able to train, saying this is how a vehicle looks like, this is how a bus looks like. So in that click, when you click that, it goes back to the system and say yes, this is how it looks like.
Oh, so it's not even about protecting me.
No.
How?
Yeah.
All this time I thought, oh, this website really wants to protect me.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about the business case now. When a CEO asked, why should I care about machine learning for my business? What is your answer?
Now, very top of mind, I'll talk about efficiency, okay? Because one of the things that machine learning has helps businesses to do is to being able to come up with more leaner processes and create more advanced solutions that will not have been created by a human. Okay, so for example, global companies, I can take an example of Amazon. They use machine learning to be able to segment the global market and come up with the features of different products curated to certain segments. So, for example, they don't need to open an office in every country. They do global shipments, and all they need to do is use data to be able to look at the penetration of the products in different markets. So it enables the penetration of those products quicker. And that's what's driving what you call the platform business model. I'm sure some of the listeners here run the Airbnb business. Airbnb uses machine learning to be able to rank the quality of rooms. So when they ask you to post photos of your facility, there's an algorithm that looks around of the room. It checks, for example, the logos on the fridges, the logos on the TVs, the quality of the furniture, and no more importantly, the location data. It knows where you're uploading that photo from. And it can be able to classify that this facility is worth this much. So based on the amenities that you have, the color, it ranks and tells you this is probably $100 a day a facility.
Yes.
This is a $50 a day facility. This is a $80 a day facility. So can you imagine, traditionally, they will have been sending an inspector to come and inspect the building and come up with a verification. So like it's done now with hotels, whenever they're getting the star awards, first what is it called, there's this classification of hotels, yeah, 5-star, 2-star, 3-star, you know, they usually send physical inspectors to do that. But now with machine learning, you don't have to send humans to do it. It can be done by this the machine learning softwares itself.
So it saves time, it saves money.
Saves time, it saves money, and removes bias.
Removes bias. But can it completely remove bias? And I'm asking this just when I first started using ChatGPT, I was like, these responses are, you know, very tilted towards our Western folk, male and pale normally. And I found there to be a lot of bias. So how is the bias completely removed?
Yeah, true. That actually hinges on the same principle that we were addressing at the beginning of this discourse, which is data that is fed into those models. Now, because a lot of these initiatives are driven by scholars from the West, they only access data that's accessible to them, which is Western data. And where does that leave us as Africa? So we are impaired in terms of access to these ecosystems, where we're able to have a voice that can utilize our data. So as a result, for example, we still don't have a model that can accurately do facial recognition for African faces. Number two, we still don't have large language models, which are now one of the machine learning algorithms for doing language translation for our local African dialects, especially for voice. Facebook has tried with text. Yeah, so when you go to Facebook, you can type in, for example, in Zulu, and you find a translation in English. Yeah, you can type maybe in Igbo, find a translation in English. Swahili, find a translation in English.
Yeah.
However, for voice, it's still not accurate. There's a platform called Otter, which does voice transcription. So, for example, for you, when you're having this conversation in English, it's going to be very accurate when it's producing a transcript of a conversation.
Yes.
However, when we switch now to our local African dialects, non-existent, do not able to come up with a, So we find that as a form of bias in terms of local contextualization.
Yeah. You mentioned that they get to save money earlier, and I'd love for us to talk numbers, right? What are the tangible financial benefits that companies can see from adopting machine learning?
Yeah. So one immediate benefit is lean structures. So previously you would employ, for example, a significant amount of human resource to do some work that will involve analytics or data collection. But now, just for example, we mentioned about ChatGPT. It takes you a short time to come up with a report that will have taken you almost a week or two. It also helps to have access to information quickly with less costs. If you're doing an analysis, for example, for the South African population, you have an opportunity to use the ChatGPT to extract that data for you. So it makes sense to utilize that because it's cost saving for businesses. You don't have to use traditional models to do that. Businesses that have an advantage are the ones which are leaner. Outsourcing. So, for example, advertising agency to create for you a marketing strategy, that's really not really something which is the disposal of most SMEs. Yeah, so you find them utilizing the machine learning platforms to develop those.
Okay, I hear you. And in your view, does machine learning create efficiencies or can it also create entirely new revenue streams?
Yes, that's another new revenue streams. Yeah, so depending on your business processes, what we keep encouraging is for companies on businesses not to discard traditional models. What we always encourage is augmenting those traditional models and adding a layer of AI on those models. So it's just putting like additional steroids on the traditional model. So the creativity element will remain. You've got three aspects that are traditional, which is emotions, creativity, and intuition that cannot be mimicked by machines or this AI. Those are the differentiator.
I hear you. Now let's talk risk and responsibility. Fraud detection and risk management are often cited as machine learning strengths. How exactly does it do this better than traditional systems?
Yeah, so for example, I'll go back to the four V's of data. So volume. For example, transactional data is huge, humongous. So you cannot rely on a human just to sit and monitor transactions, people sending money from one location to the other. The next one is now the velocity. So the speed of this transaction is so fast. You've got volumes, millions and millions of transactions per second or per minute. You cannot rely on a human insights to track. So that's where it comes in. You're able to detect such.
Okay. But every opportunity does have risks. I think that is clear for everybody who's operating in the space. What are some of the hidden challenges that businesses face when they are implementing machine learning?
So one of the challenges we experience is capacity. I did mention one earlier when we talked about most of these ecosystems being Western driven. Now we don't have local contextualization of use cases that are relevant for our context in terms of data. Why? It's because of skills. So our universities are not training well enough in terms of research. We are not well resourced to challenge the status quo. These initiatives need a lot of financing without a lot of pressure for results.
Yeah.
It takes years to build some of these models without expecting immediate wins. The other challenge is, even for the universities that have got good research, there's brain drain.
Yeah.
We find a better, better remuneration from other countries. Yeah. And the well-resourced professors going to join there, so leaving very scant, knowledge base for this.
Yeah.
And then finally, it's also regulation. We've been a bit cautious, for example, regulatory-wise.
Mm.
So you find one of the key drivers in terms of industries is there's financial institutions,
yes,
manufacturing sector, retail sector. They've been slow to adapt because of that fear of exposure, risk of exposure. Yeah. So they're so guarded that they come up with policies that prevent the use of some of these technologies. I can see a specific example with some work we've done in the financial sector, which drives what you call using machine learning to drive financial inclusion. So we are able to create an algorithm that can provide credit score for a person who doesn't have a bank account, and that will ensure that they have access to credit. But you see, most banks will refuse.
They will. Interesting. And I'm so glad that you touched on regulation, because I want to know how ethics come into play. Bias in data, privacy, surveillance. What should leaders be most mindful of?
For in terms of regulation?
Yeah, so how do ethics come into play?
No, so ethics actually can be driven by two things. So first is the ecosystem that you exist, which is the fabric that governs the tapestry of your organization, policies that are there to guide how you operate, the mission, vision, and values. Yeah. So we tend to take that for granted, but it comes in very key. For example, do you respect the privacy of your customers before you come up with intervention?
Yeah.
Are you ethically guided by being cautious of the impact of some of this research finding? And especially in medical, And there are actually cases, and I can give an example of two cases. One actually happened in South Africa, I believe, this year.
Oh.
One happened in Kenya. 7 years.
Mm.
So there were cases on Facebook where some, in Kenya it was two girls who were separated at birth.
Mm.
And they met on Facebook, and they, after 16 years, because of the Facebook algorithm of friends you would know. Yeah. I don't know whether I read somewhere, did something similar happen in South Africa?
I'm not too sure. Is it the story of the blood and water story? I know it was the one that was adapted into a Netflix series.
No, I'm not sure it is written Netflix. So I think the story just broke.
But just broke.
The one in Nairobi was those two girls.
Mm.
The mother gave birth to the girl.
Mm.
And then the nurses swapped the girls. So one girl has been living with another family, knowing that they're sisters, only for them to meet in Facebook 16 years later. And this is because of the Facebook algorithm. So you see now that's an ethical issue. These AI models, when they're created, they don't take in regard the repercussions of this anxiety that those families face when they're finally connected. Yeah. So those are some of the nitty-gritties about ethics. Yeah.
Timothy, hold on. So two mothers give birth to babies.
Yes.
The nurses swap the babies. And I get Bongi's baby, Bongi gets my baby.
Yeah, but there were one mother had twins, the other had one.
Oh.
Yeah, so when they go to the nursery where they separated from their mothers, there was, I think, a mistake. And then they gave the wrong child to the wrong mother.
Ah, but
so the one
also,
mother went home.
The nurse can't see the resemblance that is not there.
Exactly.
That is such crookery.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. So
You can Google. It was profiled. It was very prominent in the media.
Mm.
But Facebook didn't say anything about it.
Mm.
However, it happened around the time that Facebook running a campaign. I don't know whether you can recall when they were saying, please share a photo of yourself. We show you how you will age, how you're going to look like in 20, 30 years. So they were training their model for facial recognition using that.
I'm going to research about it after this. I wanted to get to the how-to, right? The how-to of adaptation. For a company that's considering machine learning, where should they start? What is step one?
So as I hinted earlier, we need to stick to the basics. So just knowing your value proposition as a business, who your target market is, what product are you producing, what is your route to market. But then once you have that in place, how do you accelerate using AI, okay? And then when, how do you start? So first do an audit. It's important to do a survey to understand the fitness of your business to adaptation. You've got different levels of fitness. For example, the legal sector as a because of the regulatory compliance, some areas, healthcare, if you're a doctor, what you need to know about AI, what are the limits? Are you able to Google about medicine and prescriptions, their guidelines on that? If you're in retail, what are some of the areas that you can use to capitalize? Maybe social media, marketing, and so on and so forth. So that maturity of your industry is important. And then lastly, it's also about availability of resources. Yeah, so do you have the technical know-how to be able to adapt? To those changes.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And what makes the difference between successful integration and expensive failure?
Okay. So, depending on how you're looking at it, because there's something we call survivorship bias. So sometimes you find success in failure.
True.
Yeah. And because some of these technologies, and there's something we call hype cycle. Hype cycle means the innovation trigger and sustainability of that innovation in the long term. So what you tend to find is companies take a long time to innovate because they fear starting to innovate. And on the other spectrum, the companies were always agile. Like they're quick to adapt.
Yes.
So something comes up new, they already jumped on it.
Yeah.
But it also comes at a price.
Yeah.
So there are those who are, for example, very reserved, waiting for something to catch up before they plunge on. Yeah. Maybe just in the business world, we like using the example of Kodak, Nokia, to just demonstrate, for example, why did Kodak not come up with a phone?
Yes.
Right now, people are taking photos using phones. And the business of Kodak was photos. So why didn't they come up with a phone called Kodak, for example? Apple has been heralded as killing BlackBerry because of the keyboard at touch. Which BlackBerry introduced a keyboard, but they did not transform that keyboard into touch. So you find the same principles of adaptation. And success can be measured in the short term and then also in the long term.
It sounds like you need to be innovative, though, for stuff like this. Because who would think that this QWERTY keyboard that I have as buttons can actually translate onto a screen? And how does a business decide which type of ML, whether it's supervised, unsupervised, or reinforcement? How do they decide which is most appropriate for their specific problem?
Yeah. So again, how do you decide? You can use KPIs, key performance indicators. So how do you do that? For example, looking at your performance and then measuring that performance based on the key strategic direction that you're taking, looking at your strategic plan. Think about the what we call the innovation trigger. The board decides we need to move into a new direction. Our product is becoming redundant.
Interesting. I'm still thinking about the story of the twins and the kids that are switched at birth. And I'm wondering what is the end goal? After these machines have learned, after all this data is used effectively, what is the end goal? Where are we going?
So I think it's just let me call it evolution, yeah?
Mm.
Yeah, because remember, we have existed in four industrial revolutions. Mm. We are the first, we have the second, third. Mm. Mm. Now we're in the fourth, mm. which is now AI and smart decision driven.
Yeah.
But then the evolution is changing into a revolution. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So it will go wherever it goes. Wherever the evolution takes us, that's where we're going.
Yeah.
Sure. Exactly. I don't know if I should be scared or excited.
Mm.
And speaking of excitement, what are the most exciting new trends in machine learning that you believe will reshape industries in the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
Okay, so very quickly, one of the applications is what we call cobots.
Mm.
So we are finding humans working alongside machines to improve efficiency and reduce risks at work. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, we also have the innovation around medical and healthcare. So this is going to improve our lifestyle. Yeah, we're able to live, our lifespan is going to increase because we're able to come up with more interventions,
yeah.
current problems, modern medical solutions. And you can see lifespan increasing. So, for example, in the first industrial revolution, people used to eat raw food because they had no fire. But then when they discovered fire, they were able to cook food, keep themselves warm, yeah, starting to melt iron, using that iron to till land, and they started living longer, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So now we're able to avoid, we're able to avoid some problems just by use of these technologies, you mean being able to predict.
Mm.
Yeah. So, for example, you're able to predict in areas like Japan, they're able to predict an earthquake. And then coming up with measures to avoid that from happening.
Yeah.
So there's a philosophy shift in businesses right now that we call, we are shifting from detection and repair to predicting and preventing.
Mm.
Yeah. So everything is becoming predictive. Mm. If you're predicting that you're going to make a loss as a business, and then you come up with measures to prevent you from making the loss.
Mm.
So what does that mean? Your business will be more sustainable.
Yeah.
In the long term.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the kind of key shifts that you're seeing. Yeah?
Oh, exciting. And can you share examples, perhaps, of industries where machine learning adaptation is lagging, but could be game changing if they embraced it?
Yeah. So one that has been lagging and is fast changing because people are now pouring resources there is mining, for example.
Mm.
So we've been using a lot of wastages, mining, prospecting of where minerals are, using old methods to scan the environment, creating a lot of pollution, wasting, blasting. Yeah, but now Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates have come up with a company that uses artificial intelligence to do prospecting of minerals. And they're actually in Africa doing some work in Congo, Zambia, trying to use satellite imagery, analysis of surface data, and they've been able to discover high deposits of copper just without even drilling the ground. Yeah, yeah. So we're seeing that that changing. Yeah, yeah. So another area that's been guarded is in predictive medicine and healthcare.
Mm.
Yeah, we saw ourselves struggling a lot during COVID, and we are not able to control much of its spread. And I hope, it's my hope that at least we're able to invest more in that area of biomedical research, genetical engineering just be able to predict some of these things.
And if you had to bet, what's the next big leap in machine learning that businesses should prepare for?
Yeah, so the next big leap is what we call quantum technology.
Okay.
Yeah, this is going to obliterate the current ecosystem we have for computer communication and computer generations.
Mm.
So right now, computers are communicating in bits, which is zeros and ones.
Mm.
Yeah, that is a new technology that's already underway. It's called quantum technology.
Yeah,
it's going to really obliterate. Now it's gonna ride on the success which has been done by the fifth generation connectivity, which is the 5G, the advanced computation, which has been driven by likes of NVIDIA, Intel, and you can see the profitability of those companies going off the roof. Yeah, so that's something that we need to be on the lookout and plan for.
Love it. And once a company invests in machine learning, how do they measure whether it's working?
So that ROI, it's depending now again on the level you are as a company. What is your maturity level? As I said, there's something we call the hype cycle.
Yes.
So the companies which have been on the emergent stage, they've reached what we call a peak of inflated expectation, and now they're heading to a trough of disillusionment before it goes to the plateau of productivity. However, based on the support they have and how the core business is performing, something controversially right now is that most of the companies that were early adopters for AI have already given a warning that they are not getting enough profitability compared to the investment that was done earlier.
On AI?
Yes, including Google itself.
Oh.
So it's already given some warning to the investors to want the return on investment because of them putting a lot of money, but they're not seeing that money coming back. Yeah, so that's where you see a lot of realignment shifts in terms of staffing, people losing jobs here and there. Yeah.
I'm even more curious about them not realizing the return on investment. What is missing?
So I think the thing is about we had sort of hyped so much about the adoption of AI. The returns have not been, like, for example, so, and even how you price. So, for example, ChatGPT, you know, the way it's priced and you look at the way it's used, you got a free. So, at the same time, you want people to pay for something that they're also helping to develop the product.
Yes.
Yeah, because the data that we put there, they're using that data to make the system better.
Yes.
And then you get the guys who are super experts who will tell you even the current versions that have come up are not that good as the first ones.
And it's so expensive.
Yeah, so you find other AI engines such as Grok, which is owned by Twitter, outperforming the first ones that came, like DeepSeek, Llama, the Facebook one, and ChatGPT. Yeah. Now you find that they're being outperformed by a more recent one like Grok. Yeah, so you find that expectation and the business model still. People are still learning how to price. I think it's going to take like 5 years before it finally settles. But for sure, you're onto something. And the same way people are doubting about how the internet will change the world. We may have naysayers at this time, but for sure we're on to something.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up because I was going to ask, is the ROI not realized just yet and they need to stick around? Yeah. Or are we actually realizing that the human element is and will always be important?
Yeah, the human element for sure as a constant will always be important. But businesses just need to ease the pressure on ROI.
Because now I'm thinking
ROI is an investor driven.
Now I'm thinking about, because I'd read an article a couple of months ago about the five or four big accounting firms no longer hiring. You know, at first they used to have these interns, or do they call them clerks, for articles. They're no longer hiring them because AI can do the work that they would need to do. And now I'm thinking, if you're hiring young graduates right now or young employees, young professionals, what you're also developing over time is a pipeline for leadership, right?
Yeah.
And if the return on investment is only going to be realized, let's say 5 years from now, that means you've pushed back your leadership potential 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good thing and also a bad thing. First, we miss the opportunity to bring into the business ecosystem young potential leaders, but also they're able to find something meaningful to do. So they're able to get more challenging tasks. We know, and I think there's a different, maybe as a different subject, we tend to misuse that intern resource. You find some interns being used for some very mundane tasks,
Yes.
like serving tea in the office, and
Yes, making copies.
So, and most of them are quite knowledgeable. If you look at, for example, statistics coming from banks, there are some banks which do not even take interns because they actually have got knowledge about how to hack systems. They can transfer huge sums of money. So it's really a debate that needs to be observed. But as you say, in the thread of this, in the trajectory of this discussion, we're discussing about AI and the issue of talenting and resources, and the trend that you've spoken about the big consulting firms not hiring. That remember, those consulting firms are risk avoidant. So they would like not to expose much of the client data to humans, because again, there are things like leakages that come,
Yes.
which is a human driven. So that
Yes.
risk avoided.
You speak so extensively and so passionately about this, and I'm very curious, what sparked your own passion for machine learning?
I lost my job because of technology.
Oh.
So I used to be a general manager in a radio station, and then the board shut down the station and we were declared redundant, and that's how I started this journey. See, 7 years ago in 2016, actually nine, yeah, 2016.
And how has it been?
It's been exciting. I've met new friends, I've met new clients, I've acquired new knowledge, and it doesn't just seem to stop. New challenges are thrown to me every day by new clients, so I keep myself abreast by learning new things. But at the center of it is helping businesses perform better by creating interventions that are going to be meaningful and avoid the same predicament that I had. So that's what drives me.
So what is your service offering then?
So our service offering centers around three areas. So first, we provide trainings. So we provide trainings in the area of artificial intelligence technology, and our businesses can be able to leverage on the same. So they're both technical. We have professional trainings. So every profession, we have a training for them. Lawyers, doctors, teachers, marketers, accountants. We've designed a curriculum for each of them. And then also industries. So we have a training for the banking industry, insurance industry, manufacturing industry, government, and so on. And then every training is actually supported by a software. So the same way we have a software for banking, we have a software for insurance, manufacturing. So we support that. And then lastly, also we do advisory services. We help businesses and organizations coming up with the strategies that help them to adapt to this narrative that's evolving. So we're incorporated in three countries now: Kenya, Tanzania, and the United Kingdom. But we serve clients across the globe. We have clients in the US, Australia, Middle East, Asia, and Africa is where our home is and where we are passionate about. So most of our clients are here in Africa.
It sounds like being retrenched was the best thing that could have happened to you.
In the long term, yes. In the short term, yes. There's a price that to pay, but there's always that trigger that pushes you to challenge
Always,
yourself.
always. Oh man, thank you so much. You've helped us peel back the curtain on a subject that often feels intimidating. And I guess why? Because we're not all scientists and mathematicians, you know. But what you've shown us tonight is that machine learning is not here to replace humans. Instead, it's here to empower businesses and leaders with sharper insights, with smarter decisions, and a new edge in a fast-changing world. And the world is changing very, very fast. And I think if there's anything for my listeners, I hope that they realize that machine learning is, it's not in the future, it's happening right now. And so perhaps the question is, will their businesses merely watch it happen, or will they position themselves to thrive in this new era of intelligence? So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your passion with us. It's always a fun time talking to you.
You too, and all the best with the remainder of the show.
Cheers. Thank you.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye. Yeah, it started off very shaky. Very shaky. I was like, I'll go, calculate you. But anyway, I'm still standing. You want to know why? Because I am Nompumelelo Mbonane, and this has been another tech conversation on innovation. and the future of business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.